This is a section from the long scene between Jim and Laura. They have been dancing together, and they have hit a table and knocked the little glass unicorn off and discover that it's broken. Jim says, "We knocked the little glass horse over." Laura, "Yes." Jim, "Is he broken?" Laura, "Now he's just like all the other horses." "You mean he's lost his..." Laura, "He's lost his horn." "Doesn't matter. Maybe it's a blessing in disguise." Jim says, "Gee, I bet you'll never forgive me for that. I bet that was your favorite piece of glass." Laura says, "Oh, I don't have favorites much. It's no tragedy. Glass breaks so easily, no matter how careful you are. The traffic jars the shelves and things fall off them. Still, I'm awfully sorry I was the cause of it, Laura." Laura says, "I'll just imagine he had an operation. The horn was removed to make him feel less freakish. Now he'll feel more at home with the other horses, the ones that don't have horns." Jim sits on the arm of a chair, faces Laura. "I'm glad to see that you have a sense of humor, Laura. You know, you're different than anybody else I know. Do you mind me telling you that? I mean it. You make me feel sort of, I don't know how to say it. I'm usually pretty good at expressing things, but this is something I don't know how to say. Did anybody ever tell you that you were pretty? Well, you are. And in a different way from anyone else. And all the nicer because of the difference. Oh, boy, I wish that you were my sister. I'd teach you to have confidence in yourself. Being different is nothing to be ashamed of, because other people aren't such wonderful people. They're 100 times 1,000. You're 1 times 1. They walk all over the earth. You just stay here. They're as common as weeds. But you, well, you're blue roses." Laura says, "But blue is wrong for roses." Jim says, "It's right for you. You're pretty." "In what respect am I pretty?" "Jim, in all respects, your eyes, your hair, your hands are pretty." "You think I'm saying this because I'm invited to dinner and have to be nice. Oh, I could do that. I could say lots of things without being sincere. But I'm talking to you sincerely now. I happen to notice you had this inferiority complex that keeps you from feeling comfortable with people. Or somebody ought to build your confidence up, way up, and make you proud instead of shy and turning away and blushing." He lifts it up on a small table. Somebody ought to, he lifts it down again. "Somebody ought to kiss you, Laura." They kiss. Jim releases her and turns slowly away, crossing a little downright. Then quietly to himself, he says, "Gee, I shouldn't have done that. That was way off the beam. Would you care for a cigarette? You don't smoke, do you? How about a mint? Peppermint, lifesaver. My pocket's a regular drugstore. Laura, you know if I had a sister like you, I'd do the same thing Tom does. I'd bring fellas home to meet you. Maybe I shouldn't be saying this. This may not have been the idea in having me over. But what if it was? There's nothing wrong with it. The only trouble is that in my case, well, I'm not in a position to... I can't ask for your number and say I'll phone. I can't call up next week and ask for a date. Well, I thought I'd better explain the situation in case you misunderstood and I hurt your feelings, Laura. You won't call again." "No, I can't, Laura. You see, I've got strings on me, Laura. I've been going steady. I go out all the time with a girl named Betty. She's a nice, quiet home girl like you, and Catholic and Irish, and in a great many ways, we get along fine together. I met her last summer on a moonlight boat trip up the river to Alton on the Majestic. Well, right away from the start, it was Love. Oh, boy, being in love has made a new man of me, Laura. The power of love is pretty tremendous, you know. Love is something that changes the whole world for you. Well, it happened that Betty's aunt took sick, and she got a wire and had to go to Centralia. So naturally, when Tom asked me to dinner, well, naturally, I accepted the invitation, not knowing. I wish that you would say something. Laura gives Jim the broken unicorn. What are you doing that for? You mean you want me to have him? What for? A souvenir. Amanda calls off stage. I'm coming, children. She enters in the dining room from the kitchen. I thought you'd like some liquid refreshment. She puts a tray on the small table. She lifts the glass. Mr. O'Connor, have you ever heard that song about lemonade? It's lemonade, lemonade, made in the shade and stirred with a spade. Good enough for any old maid. Jim, no, ma'am. I never heard that one. Amanda, why are you so serious, you children? Jim says, well, we were having a serious conversation, Miss Wingfield. Amanda says, I don't understand you modern young people at all. When I was a girl, I was gay about everything all the time. Jim says, you haven't changed a bit, Mrs. Wingfield, not a bit. Amanda says, I suppose it's the gaiety of the occasion that has rejuvenated me. Well, here's to the gaiety of the occasion. She lifts the glass so violently that some of it spills on her. Ooh, I baptized myself. She puts the glass on a small table. I found some cherries in the kitchen, some maraschino cherries. I put one in each of the glasses. Jim, you shouldn't have gone to all that trouble, Miss Wingfield. Amanda says, it was no trouble at all. Didn't you hear us cutting up in the kitchen? I was so outdone with Tom for not bringing you over sooner. But now you've found your way out here. I want you to come all the time, not just once in a while, but all the time now. Oh, I think I'll go back in the kitchen now. Excuse me. Jim, oh, no, ma'am. Please don't go. As a matter of fact, I've got to be going myself. The man says, oh, Mr. Connor, why, it's only the shank of the evening. Jim says, well, you know how it is, Ms. Wingfield. The man says, you mean you're a young working man and have to keep working man's hours? Yes, ma'am. The man says, well, we'll let you off early this time, Mr. O'Connor, but only on the condition that you stay later next time, much later next time. What's the best night for you? Saturday night, is that the best night for you, Jim? Well, as a matter of fact, Ms. Wingfield, I have a couple of time clocks to punch. One in the morning and another one at night. Amanda, oh, isn't that nice? You're so ambitious. You work at night, too? You work at night, too? No, ma'am, not work, but Betty. Betty? Says Amanda. Who's Betty? Jim, oh, just a girl. The girl I go steady with. Amanda says, you mean it's serious? Jim says, oh, yes, ma'am. We're going to be married the second Sunday in June. Amanda sits slowly down on the daybed and says, Tom didn't say anything at all about you going to be married, Mr. O'Connor. Jim says sheepishly, well, the cats are not out of the bag at the warehouse yet, Ms. Wingfield. He picks his head up from the telephone table. You know how they are at a place where you work. They call you Romeo and stuff like that. It's been a wonderful evening, Ms. Wingfield. I guess this is what they mean by Southern hospitality, huh? The man says, it was nothing, nothing at all. Jim says, I hope it don't seem like I'm rushing off, but I promised Betty I'd pick her up at the Wabash Depot. By the time I get my jalopy down there, a train will be in. You know, some women are pretty upset if you keep them waiting. The man says, yes, I know all about the tyranny of women. Well, goodbye, Mr. O'Connor. She puts her hand out and he takes it. I wish you happiness and good fortune. You wish him that too, don't you, Laura? You wish him happiness and good fortune, don't you, Laura? Laura says, yes, I do, Mother. Jim crossed it to Laura. Goodbye, Laura. I'll always treasure that souvenir you gave me. And don't you forget the good advice that I gave you. He shouts, so long, Shakespeare. Thanks again, ladies. Good night. He grins and ducks jauntily out of the kitchen door. There's a pause. Then Amanda says faintly, well, well, well. Things have a way of turning out so badly. Laura's crossed to the phonograph. She puts on one of the old records. Amanda says, I don't believe that I would play the phonograph now, Laura. Well, well. Our gentleman caller was engaged to be married. Tom! Tom, calling from the kitchen. What, mother? Amanda says, come out here. I want to tell you something very funny. Tom enters from the kitchen door through the portieres and says, has the gentleman caller gotten away already? Amanda says, the gentleman caller made a very early departure. That was a nice joke you played on us, too. Tom says, how do you mean? Amanda says, you didn't mention that he was engaged to be married. Jim, engaged? Amanda says, that's what he just informed us. Tom says, I'll be jiggered. I didn't know about that. Amanda says, it seems very peculiar to me that you didn't know about that. What's peculiar about it, mother? Didn't you tell me he was your best friend down at the warehouse? He is, but how did I know that he was engaged to be married? Amanda says, it seems very peculiar you didn't know your best friend was engaged to be married. Tom says, the warehouse is the place where I work, mother, not where I know things about people. Amanda says, you don't know things anywhere. You live in a dream. You manufacture illusions. He started toward the door. Where are you going now? Where are you going? Tom says, I'm going to the movies. Amanda says, that's right. Now that you had us make such fools of ourselves, the effort, the preparations, all the expense, the new floor lamp, the rug, the clothes for Laura, all for what? To entertain some other girl's fiancé? Go to the movies, go to the movies. Don't think about us, a mother deserted, an unmarried sister who's crippled and has no job. Don't let anything interfere with your selfish pleasure. Just go to the movies, go to the movies. All right, I will. And the more you shout to me about my selfish pleasures, the quicker I'll go, and I won't go to the movies either. Gets his hat from the phone table and slams out. Amanda follows him out upon the fire escape and shouts to him, go then. Then go to the moon, you selfish dreamer. She closes the door on the interior. The interior scene is in pantomime. Tom speaks from the fire escape. Tom says, I didn't go to the moon. I went much further. For time is the longest distance between two places. I left St. Louis. I descended these steps of the fire escape for the last time and followed from then on in my father's footsteps, trying to find in motion what was lost in space. I traveled around a great deal. The cities swept about me like dead leaves. Leaves that were brightly colored but torn away from the branches. I would have stopped, but I was pursued by something. It always came upon me unawares, taking me altogether by surprise. Perhaps it was a familiar bit of music. Perhaps it was only a piece of transparent glass. Perhaps I'm walking along a street at night in some strange city before I found companions. And I pass the lighted window of a shop where perfume is sold. The window is filled with pieces of colored glass, tiny transparent bottles in delicate colors, like bits of a shattered rainbow. Then all at once, my sister touches my shoulder. I turn around and look into her eyes. Oh, Laura, Laura, I tried to leave you behind me. But I'm more faithful than I intended to be. I reach for a cigarette. I cross the street. I run into a movie or a bar. I buy a drink. I speak to the nearest stranger. Anything that can blow your candles out. For nowadays the world is lit by lightning. Blow out your candles, Laura. And so goodbye.